And salutations, everyone out there in internet land. Welcome to another episode of the Fancast Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Davis, and this is a podcast about movies. It is not a podcast about television, nor is it a podcast about Garbage Pail Kid collections. This is a podcast about movies. And I am joined, as always, every week with the man, the myth, the legendary, Sean O'Connell.
I blame us for the fact that we don't talk about the Garbage Pail Kids enough.
We should, right? I'm waiting for someone to do a feature of Disney princesses reimagined as Garbage Pail Kids.
Would it be a live-action feature or
no,
animation?
One of these, you know, we're guys that are online all the time, looking through RSS feeds and whatnot. And the big trend recently has been Disney princesses reimagined as blank.
Yes,
and there's all these artists everywhere that are reimagining these princesses as superheroes, as college. I think that's the last one I saw, Disney princesses in college.
Okay.
So, but I want to see Disney princesses as Garbage Pail Kids. More love.
That's fine. Listen, if we're getting a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie at the end of the summer, then the Garbage Pail Kids can't be far behind.
Shared universe? What do you think?
Oh, now you're talking.
Now we're getting into some craziness. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for those who aren't even familiar with the Garbage Pail Kids. We're going off on a tangent, as always. But here we are. Sean, we got a lot going on this week. The Winter Olympics are starting on NBC, and we're going to talk about our favorite movie based on a Winter Olympic sport. So a sport that's going to be featured during the Winter Olympics. We're going to pick our favorite movie that features that sport. And we're also going to talk about the new movies in release this week. And the Monuments Men and the Lego Movie, and also Vampire Academy. I don't know if you saw Vampire Academy. We didn't discuss that beforehand, but we can.
I don't think anyone's seen it. I'm pretty sure the studio has not screened it for critics in advance.
Yeah, I have never been to the Vampire Academy, but we can talk briefly about that and what you should expect, what it is if you haven't heard of it. But first, the biggest news story of the week. We like to start off our podcast with the biggest news story of the week, talking about it. And you can't get any bigger than Jesse Eisenberg being cast as Lex Luthor in the Man of Steel sequel, tentatively titled Batman vs. Superman. Let's get your thoughts, Sean. What do you feel about this? How do you feel about this?
I'm indifferent until we see it.
Stop. Tell me how you feel about this.
I think that it could be a great decision, but who knows? I mean, we know so little about the direction of – I think the hiring of Jesse Eisenberg points a little bit towards the direction that they're going to go because he's younger, obviously. They're not going after – it's funny. You see these reports that come out after the fact where people play Monday Morning Quarterback and you find out that – you know, Warner Brothers had Tom Hanks on their wish list and, you know, Bryan Cranston is everybody – the fans wanted Bryan Cranston, but it turns out he was never even approached. And, you know, when you say Hanks, you think, well, that's crazy. I mean, he's a two-time Oscar winner. He's a serious actor. But, I mean, Gene Hackman played him in the first two films. So, you know, people probably felt the same way when Gene Hackman signed on to a Superman movie back in the day. But so now they're going Eisenberg, which means they're going younger.
Which means there must have been a rewrite somewhere, right? If they were originally going for Tom Hanks and then decided to go to Jesse Eisenberg, I mean, these are two completely different characters.
Yes, and two different – it automatically sets a different tone because now Lex, you know, being in his 30s is coming from a completely different place than, you know, he would have been had Tom Hanks played him. So you're right. It does feel like it's part of this whole work in progress. But how do I feel about it? I think he's a great actor, and we've seen him in some outstanding things. Did they just watch The Social Network and think, like, yes, we want him to do this again? I think it's more along, like, we saw him in that Now You See Me, where he was an arrogant, cocky, you know, smartest guy in the room type personality. And I think that could fit really well into Lex. So, yeah, I mean, he totally can do it, but it just – to me, it raises more questions about the tone of the sequel and the direction that they want to go. And I'm intrigued to find out more because we just don't know now. We don't know yet.
We don't know yet. And I am just as intrigued. And I imagine it was those two performances that Warner Brothers saw and said, look, this isn't just a nerdy Michael Cera. This is a guy who has a coldness in him, who's very smart, who can kind of spit out some really great lines of dialogue and play perhaps a self-made billionaire, you know, if that's the route they go. There are some rumors circulating online about what kind of story they're going to go with Jesse Eisenberg and sort of where we're going to meet them coming up. But I think we're gonna see a Lex Luthor who's a businessman and who is sort of a champion of Metropolis when we meet him. I think the roles are going to be reversed at the beginning of this movie. I think Superman is going to be the bad guy. And Lex Luthor is going to be the good guy. He's going to be the guy that's probably funneling a lot of money into the rebuilding of Metropolis. And I think that's where Bruce Wayne is going to come into place as well. There are rumors that the opening premise of this movie is going to be set around the rebuilding of Metropolis, which I don't know if that came into play when everybody was criticizing the first film from destroying Metropolis. But I do like that if that is the foundation, the literal foundation, of the setup for Man of Steel 2. I like that. I like how – because that's how you could see Bruce Wayne being involved. Wayne Enterprises, of course, has a lot of money. He is somebody who likes to protect his city. And you could see him coming over to try to help the people of Metropolis and kind of quarreling with Lex Luthor in some fashion.
I think we both agree that while the casting of Lex Luthor is a huge story, I don't think – you know, getting Jesse Eisenberg sells more tickets. Like, you know.
No, it doesn't. I think there's going to be a bigger villain. I think they need to bring out somebody who is a physical threat to Superman as well as, you know, I think Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor is going to be more of an intellectual threat against Bruce Wayne. Okay. I feel like those are two very smart men. And I think I could see those two, more so than Superman and Lex Luthor, I could see Bruce Wayne and Lex Luthor having some really great scenes because both Eisenberg and Affleck can chew some scenery when they're given great lines. But I do think Superman is going to need a physical threat. I hope it doesn't come in the form of them putting Jesse Eisenberg in some kind of mech suit. I hope it doesn't come down to that.
That hurts me. You just said that out loud, and that pains me.
I know. But I do think there is going to need a physical threat for Superman, and I don't know if that's going to come from somewhere outside of Earth or what have you, but we do know that Wonder Woman is in the movie, Gal Gadot. There are rumors that other heroes may be set up or may make appearances, so that leads me to believe there is something there is going to be a darker force that is too powerful for the human.
Are you buying into this? They may shoot Justice League back to back with this or not?
I am buying into the fact that they know where they want to go after this because we had Man of Steel in 2013, and now we have this coming 2015. Right?
16.
Yeah, that's right. 2016. So they can't wait until Man of Steel 2 comes out to see how it did like they did with Man of Steel. They are planning this like Marvel is, I imagine. And I imagine they're going to have not only a solo movie to launch out of Man of Steel 2, but yes, I definitely think they'll have a team-up movie coming soon after. I don't know if it's going to be right on the heels of Man of Steel 2, but definitely they're going to want to line up something. So Marvel has two movies a year now.
Yeah.
They're going to want two movies a year. So they're going to start lining up now. I think Man of Steel proved okay. Yes, it's maybe a little bit rockier and not as successful as the Christopher Nolan movies were, but this is the right groundwork to begin launching our universe, which is good. You know, I don't think Man of Steel was bonkers successful like Iron Man was in launching that universe, but I think Man of Steel was successful enough to use that as your foundation and build.
I'll tell you what's frustrating to me is that we feel compelled to – so far we've had two different film versions of Superman, and his villains in them have been, for the most part, Lex Luthor and General Zod. So we're rebooting this mythology, and in his first movie he gets Zod, and in his next one he gets Lex Luthor. Like, there are so many other Superman villains that
could and should be explored, and we just keep seeing newer versions of characters that we've already seen before, and that's somewhat frustrating to me.
Well, I think you need Lex Luthor in this universe. You can't wait until a fourth film to introduce Lex Luthor. He is Superman's arch nemesis. Right. So, but I agree, and I also think that some of the I also think that, like I said before, there is going to be a larger presence in this movie. I think that's where you're going to see a Superman villain that we haven't seen yet is going to pop up, I imagine.
Okay.
And who that will be, I don't know. I know people would like to see Brainiac.
Or Darkseid.
Or Darkseid. Whenever I hear Darkseid, I want to go, West Side? Darkseid? But yeah, you know, Brainiac, Jesse Eisenberg, that would be an interesting villain. I could see Lex Luthor being involved in that. But, you know, it should be interesting. You know, it's not – they're not doing what Spider-Man 2 is doing, where right in their first trailer, they just show you like 10 Spider-Man villains and just say, hey, we're going to go wherever. Spider-Man is having fun with it, and they are bringing a lot of villains in. Some may say too many, but I am going to give that film the benefit of the doubt and see how they launch into that universe. But yeah, we're hoping that Man of Steel 2, or whatever they call this movie, is going to introduce enough where you don't feel like you're crowding the movie, and at the same time, you're teasing this larger universe that you're now introducing us to. I think that's how this movie will be successful, if it can correctly balance that, you know, not overcrowding it, but having enough characters teased that we can see what the future of this DC universe on the big screen is going to look like.
Yeah, I'm with you. So I'm amazed that Jesse Eisenberg wanted to accept the burden of this, because you hear that Joaquin Phoenix was offered Lex Luthor and he passed on it.
I would have loved to see him.
Well, he'd have been great. But, I mean, think about all the things it comes with, especially now because they have until 2016. You know, Every single movie that Jesse Eisenberg tries to promote is going to get Batman, Superman questions.
Yeah,
There's a – I mean, last night on the red carpet for Monuments Men, Matt Damon's getting Ben Affleck Batman suit questions because he's friends with Affleck.
Yeah, it's a lot. Well, and it's a lot too time-wise. I mean, I'm sure Lex Luthor now has to be in more than a few movies. So, you know, Eisenberg – but, you know, Eisenberg is a more available actor, it seems, than someone like Joaquin Phoenix would be. It seems, you know, Joaquin Phoenix is coming out of I'm Not There, his little experiment movie, and he's kind of working with some really powerful directors and taking on – and being choosy about his roles. And which I'm okay with, you know. I don't necessarily want to see Joaquin Phoenix. He's one of my favorite actors working today. I don't know if I want to see him locked up in four or five movies where we're not really seeing much of him because he's busy doing Batman and Superman movies. The best actors that we have, I don't know how much I want them tied down to franchises.
Yeah, I hear you. It's a problem. And especially with Affleck as a director, I was way more interested to find out what he's going to direct next. Like, what story is appealing to him as a filmmaker? And yet he's going to be in Detroit all summer filming Batman Superman, which is fine. I mean, that's great. But I would love to see what stories he was going to direct next, and we won't get that now.
I think they're going to give him a Batman movie.
Maybe he'll get Justice League. That's always sort of been the rumor. Like, if Zack Snyder's shooting something back-to-back, he's going to have to go into post-production. Affleck could direct Justice League.
I don't know if you give Ben Affleck a movie like Justice League, though.
Wow.
I don't know if you give Ben Affleck.
Oscar winner.
Yeah, but what does that mean? So, yes, he's an Oscar winner. That doesn't mean he can go, you know, do an Avengers-type movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if he's, you know, I feel like Zack Snyder is the kind of guy that could do a Justice League movie. Affleck, I could see doing a solo Batman movie, which would be interesting because it would be the first Batman movie directed by Batman.
That's kind of,
which would be really cool to see. And I think Affleck could give it could deliver a really cool Batman movie, you know, maybe one that takes place in Southie.
You say that. It's really funny because I have Good Will Hunting on the television in the background.
Of course you do. Of course you do.
It's always on in a loop in my house. No, I mean, I haven't seen it forever. It's on one of the cable channels. And the Robin Williams, Matt Damon stuff is so good in this movie. And Williams is talking about Southie, and it's just so much Boston flavor. I love it. I love it.
Okay, let's move on.
Yes.
Eisenberg's awesome. Let's see what happens. Winter Olympics starts. Lots of craziness going on in Sochi. It's making the build up to the Winter Olympics a lot pretty interesting. We're gonna be inundated with coverage, which is cool. I kind of like this time of the year. You know, you have something else to watch at night. You can get into the stories and the different kind of start with one sport and then they segue to the next sport. And you know, I always give my wife problems. Like, really, we got to watch the ice skating, but then you get sucked into like the storylines and you're like, you know, land the triple jump. Come on.
And I love the opening ceremonies.
Opening ceremonies are really cool.
I like to just sort of sack down on the couch and watch the opening ceremonies. They always do a really good job of creating a television product that's worth getting into, and I really dig it.
It is cool. Have you ever been to the Olympics? Have you ever?
No. God, no,
done
never.
Like
nah, yeah. It was in Atlanta. It was near us, but those seem like the kind of events that are so unapproachable. You know, there's just too many people and it's too hard to sort of get to the places you'd want to get to. And I have no real interest in that.
It's a lot. I went to way back when I came out of college. I worked for NBC Sports. I was lucky enough to cover Sydney 2000 Summer Olympics with their team. And it's a really cool experience that I would suggest doing one time in your life if it's in a city that's relatively near you. I remember tickets for events were pretty accessible. It wasn't like it reminded me of a film festival that had their random box offices up around there. You'd go the day of and say, okay, what's available today. You know, you have to understand so many of these sports have tons of different rounds before they get to finals. And so it was pretty accessible. If you can get to the city and you can find a place to stay, you can see a lot of stuff. And it's pretty cool.
Sochi does not sound like I'd want to be there at all.
Sochi sounds a little crazy right now. And I'm curious to see how it plays out throughout the week. But you know what? It keeps it eclectic.
It does. And speaking of eclectic, I think our choices for Olympic films are kind of off the board.
They are off the board.
But I like that, though.
You go first.
All right, I'm picking – oh, God, my dog. I knew it. I knew I couldn't get through it without him barking once. I'm going with a skiing film.
This is how professional this podcast is. do you want to ask your dog – ask your dog.
Yes.
For his favorite movie. You're going with a skiing movie. Not a lot of skiing movies. I remember when we were talking about this, I said Ski School, Ski School Part 2.
I don't know why you were pushing Ski School. There was also some like
– Ski School's awesome.
Some teeny bopper horn dog film when we were growing up called like Hot Dog. Was it Hot Dog? Wasn't that a skiing movie?
Hot Dog.
Some skiing comedy? Now, someone will back me up on this. In the comment section below, please let me know what I'm trying to think of on the fly.
Hot Dog. I don't watch Hot Shots.
Hot Dog the Movie, it was called, I think.
Hot Dog the Movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going with Better Off Dead, which is John Cusack's movie, which I love. And it's a standard 80s kind of romantic comedy. But if you remember, he was always trying to conquer this mountain as a skier, and the French girl next door knew how to ski, and she helped him out, and he'd go to the top of these mountains, and he'd race against his rival, and he ends up doing the whole mountain on one ski. So, you know, if he could do that, Lindsay Vonn could get out there, is what I'm trying to say. You know, what kind of courage does she have? No ligament in her knee?
If John Cusack could learn how to race from a French girl living next door.
On one ski, he completed
it. Cusack.
I don't know if it's the K-12 or the K-2. I forget. I think it's the K-12 was the name of the mountain.
K-something.
But his – oh, God, for the love of God. But his best friend was Booger from Revenge of the Nerds.
Who was it? He had a run in the 80s, Booger.
Yes, he did. And if you remember, he would snort the snow that was on the mountain.
There we go.
Yeah. So that's why I love that as my favorite Olympian. There you go, Olympians.
Most memorable
snort
scene.
Snort the snow on the mountain.
Don't snort the snow on the mountain.
And you're
my pick, I'm an early 90s, late 80s kid. I'm going with The Cutting Edge. D.B. Sweeney, Moira Kelly. This is a movie that actually literally takes place at the Olympics. It is about a pro hockey player, or a former pro hockey player, who has to retire from the sport. And he winds up getting involved in figure skating and learning how to figure skate with this Olympian who wants to make another run at the Olympics. And so they kind of get together, and of course it's a romantic comedy. There's lots of pratfalls and a love connection, and but you know what, it builds and it all comes together, and they try to learn the Pamchenko twist which is a move that literally cannot be done in real life. But it's a movie. And, you know, if they land the Pavchenko, they can get the gold, maybe. But there's a lot of
dive.
There's a lot of fun stuff. No, I don't even remember what that. You know what? That would be a great list of all the weird, wacky signature moves that characters had in the 80s. There was the Pavchenko.
Yes.
What was the dive?
The triple Lindy. The triple Lindy. Yes.
We actually have a piece on Fandango that's going to run. I'm not exactly sure. It's going to run tied to the Olympics, where we had a professional ice skater kind of go down some of the movies where ice skating is featured and the weird moves that they pull off. And she says whether or not they can literally be accomplished in real life. Unfortunately, none of the moves that are ever featured in ice skating movies can be accomplished. Spoiler warning. But you know what? If you like ice skating and if you like D.B. Sweeney and Moira Kelly, who were so you know they were hot stuff back then. D.B. Sweeney had a run.
Was Dabney Coleman in that movie?
No, Dabney Coleman was not in that movie. That's an inside joke. When Sean and I were talking about The Cutting Edge beforehand, I couldn't remember D.B. Sweeney's name, and I said Dabney Coleman for some reason.
Now I want to see Dabney Coleman in that movie.
Now, yes, I do. But yeah, it's a really great little movie there. I like it. So The Cutting Edge.
All right, so when you want to take a break from Olympic coverage, because you may want to at some point over the weekend, we finally have amazing movies opening in theaters this week. January was a little bit rough. Even the movies that were good, we both kind of – oh, did you ever see Jack Ryan? I liked the Jack Ryan movie, and nobody went to go see it. So
no.
Well, it's February, and we have good movies to talk about, and I think we're going to start with – let's start with The Monuments Men and ease into Lego Movie, only because we've both seen Clooney's movie.
Yeah. Monuments Men, you know, you give the – I'm horrible at on-the-spot synopsis, so give a fast, quick – what is it about?
It's World War II. The war is coming to a close, and everybody's afraid that the Nazis, as they retreat across Europe, are going to burn – all of these precious artworks that they've stolen because Hitler was building a giant museum that he wanted to collect all the world's art. And so Clooney leads a team of Matt Damon, Bill Murray, John Goodman on a mission to go behind enemy lines and retrieve these pieces of art and culture before they are destroyed forever. And it asks these big questions about, you know, are the lives of these soldiers worth risking to retrieve paintings and sculptures? And I think find some really interesting things to talk about in that debate.
Yeah, and it's a really fascinating story how these guys, they weren't soldiers, but they were sent in behind enemy lines. Yeah, the war was dying down, but they were still had to go retrieve these things from Hitler, and Hitler didn't really care about the art. He knew it was important to people, and he just wanted to take it from them. And he was hiding it, and he would just burn Picasso's just because.
Right.
And he wanted to destroy all of it. And it was a really interesting story. Now, the movie itself, for me, I liked it as a throwback, sort of like an old time, you know, you grew up watching old war pictures with your father. This feels like that. It feels like Clooney is throwing back to those kinds of movies, the war pictures from like the 50s and 60s. That's what it felt like to me. I feel like it isn't the Ocean's 11 style heist comedy that you think maybe it is with the ensemble that's in place. I feel like Clooney could have taken more advantage of the ensemble and given us some more moments. I mean, you have Bill Murray, Bob Balaban, John Goodman. Bob Balaban and Bill Murray, they are a little duo, and they do give us some really fun moments. I wanted more of that.
I agree with you that it's not this sort of Ocean's type film, you know, and it definitely had the potential to be that if he wanted to go after that tone. And you're totally right. He wanted a more reverent, kind of nostalgic feel.
Earnest. I felt an earnestness from the movie.
It can't help but have that bit of, you know, male camaraderie that Clooney sort of brings, I think, to his actual life, you know, with his close-knit group of friends. And also just when he gets a picture together, you know, he gets these guys together and puts them on this mission. I liked it more than you did once I kind of realized what it was trying to be. And you're exactly right. Like, it dials into these the tone of these 40s and 50s kind of war pictures. And I thought it was just done really well. I mean, like, the locations look great. The cast is really good. I like Bill Murray when he doesn't have to play comedic all the time. Same with John Goodman. And so I thought they were both really good. I thought Damon had a great part with Cate Blanchett and his little subplot. It's going to have a really hard time getting a mainstream audience because it just feels like the target audience is really niche on this. It's going after older audiences who want to get into this story and who will appreciate this story. But I think the people who do find it are going to like it a lot.
Oh, yeah. I think it'll find an audience. I think this is a great movie for adults at a time when there aren't a lot of movies for adults. Right. And adults want to go to the movies too, especially adults who are stuck on the East Coast in this horrible, cold, bitter weather that just keeps snowing on us. These adults, they want to get out to the movies too. And right. And the great thing about this weekend is that you can take your kids, drop them off at the Lego Movie, and you can go see The Monuments Men. Let's segue because we don't have a lot of time left. The Lego Movie I have not seen. I'm going to take my daughter this weekend. And part of the reason why I did wait out is because I wanted to ask Sean whether or not this was a good movie to take my daughter to. I see a lot of commercials for it, or you know, the Lego superheroes, the Batman, the Superman, and is this a movie that if I have a little girl at home who is familiar with Legos but doesn't play the Lego video games or anything because she's a little young, is this something that she can that will resonate with her as well?
I think the whole family is going to love it. I think that they struck the perfect balance between having to be colorful and busy enough and funny enough to appeal to young audiences. It has a lot of physical comedy in it, obviously, even though it's done with Legos and animation. But there's a third act, you know, near end twist to this movie that is just going to connect with parents. It's going to hit them right in the heart. It asks these great questions about, like, why do we play with Legos in the first place? Why are certain toys, you know, why do they exist in different forms to be used? It asks, like, when you have Legos, what kind of guy are you? Do you follow the instruction booklets one step at a time, or do you just take a pile of Legos and smash them together to see what comes of it?
See, I like that about it, that it doesn't just work in the characters of Lego, but it works in how you personally, what your experience with Legos as toys are as well.
Absolutely.
I like how they worked in all – you know, the guys that directed this, directed Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, also did 21 Jump Street. I think they're brilliant, and I think they're doing some really great stuff right now. And this is a movie that the critics are just falling all over themselves to praise. We got a note earlier today, and I know you saw this, that Lego is stacking up to be the second biggest animated pre-seller in Fandango history, right behind Toy Story 3. Which is crazy because this isn't even a sequel. This is beating out Frozen, Despicable Me 2, and Monsters University.
I mean, the irony is that I would say that it touches on the idea of toys and how we value toys in a way that we haven't seen since the first Toy Story. I'm telling you, it aspires to that level, and it actually gets there. So it's really good. And I don't want to talk too much about that twist because I haven't
– Don't talk about the twist. Yeah, don't talk about the twist, Sean.
About it too. Just know to go. Just go and see it because it's really good. And the funny thing is, like, Eric, like, the first hour of the movie, I liked it and it was funny. It's fast-paced and everything. But I thought, this is too noisy and busy. I don't know if I could really embrace this as something extremely special. But the twist makes you relook at everything you watched before it, and it changes the movie. And then by the end of it, I was just completely in love with it. So
completely in love with it. The Lego Movie. There's your quote from Sean O'Connell. You have to see the Lego Movie. Vampire Academy is based on a series of books, I believe, about these girls and their vampires, and there's different sects of vampires, and there's some high school involved, so the politics of high school at play as well. I think if you have a young preteen girl or a teen girl who's read this series, I think they're probably really looking forward to Vampire Academy. That's who I believe the film probably speaks to that group more than others.
Well, directed by the guy who did Mean Girls back in the day, too. So you would hope that there's some good comedy tonight.
Yeah, if anything, yeah, there's going to be some great high school
yeah,
comedy.
We just don't know. We don't know, unfortunately.
Sean O'Connell, yes. Thank you very much for joining me.
Of course.
Huge recommendation for the Lego Movie. Also a recommendation for the Monuments Men from both of us, even though I wasn't as crazy about it as Sean was, but I still think you should go see it, especially those adults out there who are looking to escape the snowpocalypse that has invaded our country over the last couple of weeks. Sean O'Connell, thank you very much for joining me.
No problem. Next week we have RoboCop, About Last Night, and a bunch of other titles, so tune us in then.
Bunch of different titles, and I got lots to say about RoboCop. All right, Sean O'Connell, thank you very much. And you out there, thank you for listening, and enjoy your weekend at the movies.